Joanne had been sober for exactly 6 months, the day that she almost fell off the wagon. She told me the story years later, but she still remembered it with crystal clarity down to the exact date when it happened. She was a member of one of my former congregations, and she was talking to me about her experiences in AA. She came from an alcoholic family. She was an alcoholic herself. She was married at the time with 3 children, and AA had been a godsend to her. She believed this was her last real shot at getting her life back. She knew her drinking had taken a toll on her family, but she didn't realize how much of a toll until that day when she was served with divorce papers. Her life flashed before her eyes, herself as a single mother, the fear, the pain of losing her husband, the betrayal, the rage, above all, the rage. She went outside, walking, walking, walking. She tried to reach her sponsor. She couldn't. She tried calling her friends. She couldn't reach them either. Her anguished pacing landed her in front of a bar. There it was, the glowing neon sign with the happy hour special. She could get hammered for pocket change. She pressed her head to the window. Her heart was pounding. Then her hand was on the door handle. For Joanne, the whole universe hinged on that moment. The Hebrew Bible begins with the description of the universe as it was imagined before God created the world. In this story, there wasn't just nothingness. There was a substance called Tehom, the deep. We're not told much about this substance, but that it was dark and liquid, a primordial soup of all of the raw materials of the universe. Tehom was lawless and chaotic, ever-changing. Formless and void are the biblical words. It was the place where anything is possible. It was pure potential. Then God began the project of making the world. And it was basically a project of applying structure to the Tehom, organizing the deep, making the laws by which the world would evolve. God divided the deep into categories, light and dark, water and land. God shaped the deep into objects, the sun and the moon, animals, plants, and people. Presumably, God also made laws like the law of gravity and the law that all living creatures die. Now, you may not believe what it says in the Bible, and you may not believe that there was a God who did all these things, but whether or not there was a being involved, somehow laws were applied to matter in such a way as to evolve into the world as we know it, the way things supposedly, immutably are. There are the laws of human psychology, like Freud's repetition compulsion, our tendency to inflict on others the same pain that was inflicted on us. There's the law of statistics that says that a Latina girl growing up in a Bronx housing project with a single mother will probably also wind up in poverty and struggling herself. There's the law of the heart that says that if you keep getting hurt in life, you will grow a thicker and thicker shell around you and alienate people who care about you and wind up alone. There's the law of the marketplace that says that consumerism will lead to massive quantities of fossil fuels being pumped from the ground and burned, which will lead to the earth getting hot, which will lead to disasters of the natural world. There's the law of addiction that says that an alcoholic who comes from an alcoholic family and just recently quit drinking and gets served divorce papers and can't reach her sponsor and finds a bar with a happy hour special will open the door and go in and take a drink. We're basically talking about a giant domino chain where dominoes, an infinite number of them, were set up, one after another, spanning across the cosmos in infinite directions. God or something set them all up, and God or something gave the first one a push. It's just cause and effect. It's just what is. But if that's all God is, the thing that set the dominoes in motion and then sat back and watched, God wouldn't matter. That's not a God that we care about. The God that we care about, those of us who do care, the God that we pray to, those of us who pray, is the God who breaks the laws. God the outlaw. Religious teachings are full of stories about this God as well. Take the story of Abraham in the Hebrew Bible. Depending on who you ask, Abraham is either the most awesome or the most despicable character who ever lived because of what he did to his son Isaac. Without argument, he accepted God's command to sacrifice Isaac. He brought Isaac to the mountain. He made him carry the firewood for his own demise. He lied to him about what was going on. He raised the knife to kill him. And only when God seemingly had a change of heart and said, "Do not harm the boy," did he pack up and go back home, leaving Isaac with PTSD for life. The traditional explanation for why people consider Abraham such a hero is that his devotion to God was so deep that he would sacrifice what was dearest to him on demand. That explanation leaves me cold, and I imagine it does you as well. But there is another explanation of the binding of Isaac story articulated by Rabbi Michael Lerner that I like a lot better. Michael Lerner is an author, an activist, and the founder of Tikkun magazine. Michael Lerner interprets the binding of Isaac story by telling another story about Abraham when he was a boy. This story from Abraham's childhood is part of oral tradition called Midrash. To make a very, very long story short, in a fit of teenage rebellious rage, Abraham destroys some of his father's things. His father is livid. Abraham is unrepentant, and for his recalcitrance, he is sent to the king of the land, who throws Abraham into a fiery furnace. God intervenes on Abraham's behalf, and Abraham emerges unscathed. But Michael Lerner points out that, of course, Abraham wouldn't really emerge unscathed from all this. He's been rejected by his father, kicked out of his home, and sent to a cruel king who tried to burn him to death. Talk about PTSD. The Abraham that emerges from this childhood is a wounded man. So if you connect the dots, Abraham was thrown into a fiery furnace when he was a teenager, and when his son, Isaac, was a teenager, he hears a voice telling him to supply Isaac as a burnt offering. Right on schedule, according to the laws of the universe, Abraham's inner demons are driving him to do to his son what was done to him. This is not the voice of God. The voice of God is the voice that stops him. In fact, the Hebrew word for God is different in these two parts of the story. The voice that tells Abraham to sacrifice Isaac is referred to as Elohim. This is the name for God used in the creation story, the God that made the law that if you were abused as a child, you will abuse your own children. Whereas the voice that tells God to spare his son is referred to by a different name, the name you're never supposed to pronounce, spelled YHWH. That's the name of the God of the Exodus story who leads the Israelites to freedom from slavery. That's the God that breaks the laws. The voice of the God of liberation frees Abraham from his internal slavery. In that critical moment, when the knife is raised above his head, Abraham looks into his son's eyes, and miraculously, despite all the pain he's suffered in his life, Abraham is able to love. What makes Abraham a hero is not that he proved capable of killing his son, but that incredibly, impossibly, he didn't. This story is a myth, but it's so powerful because the struggle that Abraham faced is all of our struggles, and his heroism is all of our heroism. We may not have been thrown into a fiery furnace, but we've all been hurt. We've all felt misunderstood and unrecognized. We may or may not have been cast out of our homes, but we've all felt rejected. So many of us are isolated, lonely, we become cynical. And while we may not come to the brink of killing our children, we certainly find ourselves saying and doing the exact things we swore we would never say and do. While we may not treat our spouses as cruelly as Abraham did, we certainly feel the urge to lash out at them sometimes. Or we find ourselves alone because we can't stop repeating the same destructive cycles in our relationships over and over. Sometimes we can't explain why we do the things that we do, why we hurt ourselves or the people we love. We sometimes find ourselves slaves to our own past without even realizing it, in our cultures, in our communities, reproducing the cruelty that has been handed down to us. As it was for the mythical Abraham, the voice of our own pain can be so loud in our ears, it can have so much resonance that it sounds like God to us. But then, amazingly, like Abraham, we also sometimes find ourselves overcoming our own pain and able to love. We find ourselves showing patience with our children when patience was never shown to us. We find ourselves being faithful to our partners when our parents were not faithful to each other. We find ourselves wanting to take that drink and not taking it, wanting to hit someone and not doing it, wanting to quit our dreams but keeping going. We find ourselves able to forgive one more time and believe in each other and heal our relationships even when we've never seen it done. To me, God is the substance of this miracle. God is the force in the universe that makes transformation possible. It is the force that empowers us to win the impossible victories over the repetition compulsions of our lives and our societies, to be the domino in the chain that refuses to fall. This is the story of every revolution, personal and political. And so, to our new members this morning, Laurel, Karen, Jim, Donna, Joe, Hillary, and Marquetta, this is what I believe we're about here. Telling and retelling the stories of humans who manifest God the outlaw. Connecting to the power to transform ourselves and our world. I'm so grateful that you are here to be part of these stories. Here's the end of the story about Joanne. Her head was pressed against the door, her heart was pounding, her hand was on the handle, she was full of rage, full of longing, but she never opened the door. I asked her, "What stopped you?" And she said, "Something. I don't know. I peeled my hand away like breaking an electric current. I decided that I wouldn't go into this bar." She was finally able to reach her sponsor, her friends. Her support network was back, and she moved past the moment in what she now looks back on as one of the great turning points of her life. Despite a textbook set of circumstances that should have driven her to drink, incredibly, impossibly, she didn't. Joanne was able to act out of self-love and love for her family. Joanne manifested God the outlaw. When you are a Latina woman raised by a single mother in a Bronx housing project, and now you are a Supreme Court justice, you are manifesting God the outlaw. When you keep getting hurt in your life and you've grown a thick shell and alienated people, but somehow you open your heart one more time and you are able to love, you are manifesting God the outlaw. When we collectively are finally able to stand up to corporate power, change our ways, and return our planet Earth to health, we will be manifesting God the outlaw. There is a force in the universe that makes transformation possible. That force is flowing all around us and through us right now. It's like a bottomless river, racing, ever-changing. That river doesn't know cause and effect. It is Tehom, the deep. It's the place of infinite possibilities where we all lived before the laws came to bear upon us. Every once in a while, we humans are able to dip back into that primordial current. We scoop our hands into it and drink. Every once in a while, we manifest the divine power of transformation and we break the laws of this world. Please rise in body or spirit for our final hymn, All Creatures of the Earth and Sky, number 203.